This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Gold Boys. Coming up on the show, Brad Thomas of NBC Sports will join us. We will go over Knicks Pacers, maybe get into some college football, get his thoughts, big picture NBA, and his process getting ready for the college football season. Taping this, just the way the schedules broke, availability, things like that, right before Thunder Timberwolves. We haven't spoken since the Thunder won a dominant game one. Maybe by the time you listen to this, Minnesota evens it up and it's 1-1, but I get the feeling that this is going to be OKC in some form or fashion. So probably spend some time on this series for the Monday show, and we'll see if Minnesota can either win game two by the time you're listening to this and it's 1-1, or maybe put up a fight in Minnesota. But this feels like it's inevitable for OKC at some point here, not only winning the series, but probably winning this whole thing. But we will start with the Knicks and the Pacers, and my goodness, I can't remember. I mean, first of all, this is one of the best basketball games I've ever watched, and you could say, oh, it's not game seven of a NBA finals, and people bring up Warriors-Cavs from 2016, which is fair, but this is still a playoff game, and the twists and turns of this game and the shot-making and the ridiculous comeback is just something that I am still stunned by the next day, and I've never seen a string of comebacks by one team in any sport. When you talk about the Pacers, three possessions down with under a minute to go, three times. Nobody wins that game ever. These games don't get won. You're down three-plus possessions, you know, 7, 8, 9 points, under a minute to go. Those games are over in the NBA. It's not college where you get the one-and-one. The NBA, these games are over. And they've won three of them here in their last seven. It's just incredible. And the shot-making from Nesmith, from the point where he hits the first one, 4:45 to go, it's 113-98. Nesmith hits a three, it's 113-101. He hits another one to make it 116-105, followed by a Halliburton three. Even after that, it's still 119-108 with 2:30 to go. So the Knicks are up 14 with 2:40 to go. They're up 14 with 2 minutes and 40 seconds to go. Brunson misses. Nesmith hits another three. It's 8 with 2:04 to go. Siakam splits a pair of free throws. Brunson layup makes it a 9-point game with 58 seconds to go. So 9-point game, 58 seconds to go. India inbounds it. Gets down to 51 seconds. So really a 9-point game with 51 seconds. And Nesmith hits another three. It's 6. Now you're not even, at least for me, I don't think anybody's watching this game saying, oh, the Pacers are going to win. You're thinking the line's 4.5. All right, maybe the Pacers can cover now. Maybe the spread's in jeopardy. If you laid it with the Knicks, you're starting to get a little nervous. Towns makes a layup, 123-115. 34 seconds to go. Nesmith hits another three, 123-118. After all of these threes, after all of this ridiculous three-point shooting, it's still a 5-point game with 34 seconds left. Eventually at 29 seconds left, Brunson with the turnover, Siakam gets the steal. That's the this was the challenge scenario, which I was surprised they overturned it. I thought Siakam had a good part of the jersey there. I didn't think there was enough to overturn, and this review took forever too. I mean, it felt like a good 10 minutes of real time without actually playing. And if you can't decide in 10 minutes or however long it took, it's not obvious. It shouldn't be overturned. I thought that was a rough call for the Knicks. 123-118 turns into 123-121 as Nesmith. It's another three. And this is when Towns splits the free throws, make it a 3-point game. And then the Knicks start fouling. They start fouling with 12 seconds left. I thought that was too early. You're just leaving the door open for things to go badly. And things did go badly, but things almost went really badly. Brunson somehow doesn't throw the ball away. He throws it basically into no man's land. It just bounces around in the middle of the floor, which was very unusual that there wasn't somebody there to pick it off from Indy. Eventually, he goes to Anunoby. He splits the free throw. So now you're playing the foul game, except when you miss one, now it's a 2-point game. Now you can't play the foul game anymore. And then the shot from Halliburton. And this is just such a wild sequence where down to Halliburton fakes like he's going to go for the tying bucket, goes for what we think is a three, ball bounces up. And then there is this 3 or 4 second stretch where you go through this wave of emotions watching the game. You think the game is over and the Knicks won because it's a missed shot as the ball goes up in the air. How that ball went so high up in the air and came down and went in, I've never seen a ball go that high and come back down and go through the hoop. So you're thinking the Knicks won because the ball goes in the air, it's off the rim, no good. Knicks win. Knicks are up 1-0. Then it goes through the net, and you're thinking the Pacers won because it's a game-winning three, and you're losing your mind that way, thinking the Pacers stole the game and hit a game-winning three. And then there's the other turn where his foot's on the line, and we're going to overtime. And even in overtime, Knicks are up four, and then there really should have been a goaltend to make it a six-point game. It wasn't called. The other end, the Pacers hit a three. It's a one-point game, and then the Pacers took over from there. Brunson was not great at the end of this game. Airballs a three at the end. Pulls a lot of his shenanigans to get to the line. He did get a bunch of free throws. And look, he scored 43 points. Can't kill him too much, but whew, what a wild game. Again, one of the best games I've ever seen. One of the craziest games I've ever seen. Was rooting for the Knicks. If you have the Knicks, if you're a Knicks fan, there obviously has to be some concern about rebounding from this game and blowing a game like this, blowing it at home. I think they'll be okay. I think they'll win game two. I'm not rushing here to lay the 5.5. We've seen this before where teams lose game one at home. They usually win game two and win it comfortably. I would lean towards laying the 5.5, but again, I'm talking about two teams that are, in my mind, are dead even. Do we really want to lay 5.5 with two even teams? I would expect the Knicks to win. If I had to take it or lay it, I would lay it, but I don't feel great about it. Not enough to bet, I don't think. But adjusted series price, DraftKings has Pacers minus 165, Knicks plus 145. I mean, I picked Knicks in seven. I don't see any reason to jump off it. I mean, you did break serve here. If you're Indy, that's a huge step forward. And now if you're the Knicks, you obviously have to win one on the road to win this thing, which is not impossible. Although, if you look back last year when these teams met in the playoffs, the home team won the first six games. The only home loss was the Knicks in game seven when they ran out of bodies. So after the home team winning six games in a row between these two, the road team has now won two in a row. The Pacers have won two in a row in the Garden. My goodness. I still think the Knicks can get one on the road and even it out. But, man, if that's ever what cost you a trip to the finals, that loss, a loss like that, tough to get over. Tough to get over. Not that I think they're live to win a championship, realistically, if it's them versus OKC, but oof, that's as bad as it gets. And it wasn't a lot of it wasn't on them. They did have the one turnover up five with 20 something seconds to go. But for the most part, it was just great shot making by the Pacers. You can say this though, you got to be a little bit more intense about guarding the 3-point line. You have a big lead. It's late. You know what? Give them layups, force them to take mid rangers, force them to go to the hoop. You can't just give in these wide open threes time after time. And what a performance from Nesmith. 8 of 9 from three, 5 in the last few minutes. They scored 23 points in their last 9 possessions from the 3:23 mark of the fourth quarter on. So with 3:23 left in the fourth quarter, 9 possessions, 23 points. That is nearly impossible. That is basically perfect basketball, what the Pacers did from an offensive standpoint. Just a relentless team, just a great performance, a great game, really. An all-time great game. Just incredible, incredible watching. Again, the wave of emotions between the Halliburton shot, thinking it's no good, then thinking it's the winner, and then the third option of, oh, it went in, but it's only a two. Just such a wild sequence, a wild range of feelings within a 3 or 4 second span of that ball going straight up high into the air, and it went high into the air, coming down, and then realizing he's on the line, and it's a two-pointer. Wow. Again, I'll still stick with Knicks in seven. It would be a lean towards the Knicks minus the 5.5 in game two. But Knicks better win game two. I don't think you're getting more than a split in Indy. If you're down 2-0 going to Indy, you're in a lot of trouble, to say the least. Now, again, if it's ever, and we're getting ahead of ourselves, but if it's ever down 3-1, you got 5 at home, you got 7 at home, all of that stuff. But you got to get this one if you're the Knicks. And the Pacers, look, they did it in Cleveland. They were down 1-0. You know, they didn't punt on the game. That was one of their furious rallies, one of their furious comebacks where they were down big late. They kept fighting. They got down early and just rallied and really took control of that series when they went up 2-0, and they did win the second game. So that game is in the back of my mind. That would prevent me from betting the Knicks here. So probably going to sit out game two and just root for the Knicks, and hopefully we get a good long series, man. We get another 5 or 6 games like we got in game one. We're looking at a tremendous series. I do think we'll get one. I mean, there's the whole Halliburton in the Garden thing, and he went to the choke sign, obviously thinking he had won. That would have been awkward if they had lost that game in overtime. And really, Knicks had control in overtime again, which is going to get forgotten. Up four, should have been up six. Bad call with the goal. You can't complain too much if you're the Knicks because Brunson got to the line a bunch of times when it was questionable. But I thought they got a rough call with the non-goaltend, and they got a rough call on the review. So can't blame the refs, though. Can't blame the refs. You were up 14 with 2 minutes and change left. You're up 9 with 50-something seconds left. You're up 5 with 20-something seconds. I mean, you got to win the game. You got to figure out a way to win the game. And I thought Thibodeau, again, went to the foul game much too early. But, all right, 6, 7 seconds left, I believe, in the foul. But 12, 13 seconds left, that's just too early. So, too much crap can happen. Too much bad stuff can happen. And bad stuff did happen. Pacers lead 1-0. So we'll see what Brad Thomas thinks about this. Get his thoughts. NBA, some college football. What's his process like getting ready for the season? What has he learned so far in his process? Some teams to look for. So that is going to be next. We'll talk to Brad coming up. This is Should Have Bet More Podcast. All right, Should Have Bet More Podcast. We are back. You can catch him at NBC Sports. He joins us once again. Talk a little NBA. Maybe if we have time, some college football. It is Brad Thomas. Brad, what's going on, man? A wild, wild game one. I am still in shock here. A number of hours later. How'd you enjoy the game, and what's going on? How are you?
The game was insane. So I had two bets from the game that I gave out on NBC, and it was Karl-Anthony Towns' rebounds was one of them I want to talk about. He had 5 rebounds in the second quarter, right? And by halftime, and then didn't get a single rebound in the third quarter. And I thought I was dead to rights. 11.5 is what we needed, and grabbed 3 rebounds within the first 3 minutes and then just kind of phased off. I'm like, well, this sucks. The only way I get it is if he goes to overtime. And now I'm rooting for Neesmith to keep shooting, keep stroking it. I also thought I live bet Neesmith points over at halftime. And this is one of the most wild caches ever because I go and check my bet slip and I clicked Nimhard, and Nimhard is on the bench. And I'm like, well, the only way I cash either of these is if it goes to overtime and both hit. I was like, oh my God. The game was crazy too because I had a strategy, and I put this in Discord that I wanted to bet the Pacers to win the series, but I couldn't justify plus 145, plus 150. I want them to lose game one, and then we would have got like a plus 175, plus 185. Then they go out and they win the game. Now it's pretty much unbettable from me. And I mean, kudos to them. They're the better team. They might not be the household name like the Knicks, but they're definitely the better team.
Best game you've ever seen? Top 5 games you've ever seen? I've never seen a stretch of comeback from one team like that. That's about as crazy a comeback individually as you'll ever see. 14 with 2 change to go, 9 with 50 seconds to go.
Yes.
And the fact that this has happened 3 times in their last 7 games where they're down 3 plus possessions with under a minute left, you never see these wins, and they've done it 3 times. It's stunning. It really is.
Well, you know what's funny, right? Like, I saw some people say that the Knicks didn't choke, the Pacers just kept out shooting them, but like, there was still some pretty bad clock management by the Knicks late at the end of the game that's going to go unnoticed. Like, taking shots with like 10 seconds left in the shot clock. I don't care if you have a break. When a team's just out there shooting threes and draining threes and you're giving them the ball back with extra time on the clock, that gives more possessions. Literally, like, it's such a small difference between taking a shot on the shot clock with maybe 4 seconds versus 10 or 12. But those seconds matter when you have a double-digit lead. It becomes substantial. And there was too much of that, too much kind of speeding themselves up too, right? Like that inbounds, they almost inbounded it to the Pacers there when Jalen Brunson left his feet and kind of dribbled in the air. So there's a lot of really interesting things. I'm really excited for this series. I thought the Knicks had their best shot, right, to take game one. I just don't know how they rebound. Like, I think this is one that maybe goes 7, but I just don't realistically buy into them winning the series.
Yeah, and I don't know, that Brunson pass, that was when they were up 1 before Anunoby got fouled and he split the 2 free throws, their final possession of regulation. I don't know how that pass didn't get to anyone. Like, where was everyone? Because he threw it in the middle of the field. It's almost like a pass in the NFL getting tipped and being over the middle field and just landing somehow, because usually there's bodies there, and it's somehow they were very lucky for it to go to a Nick, and I don't know how you felt. I'm a big believer in foul up 3. I think these teams are overthinking it, though. They're starting it too early. When there's 12, 13
Way
seconds
too
left,
early.
there's just so much that can go wrong once you start. Like, first of all, the Pacers defend inbounds really well. Then you got to make all your free throws. You're just setting yourself up for more stuff to go wrong. I know you don't want one shot to tie it, but even if, and they were red hot from three, I get that. But if they shoot the three, miss, rebound, the game is pretty much over. That was way too early, I thought.
You felt like, I think there's this thought of like, we don't want them to have these extra possessions. You could literally wait because they're not going to jack it up right away. Like, you foul too early. Like you said, you have to make your free throws, which becomes scary. And then the Knicks don't have like a ton of excellent free throw shooters, not like quality options that they're going to put in the crunch time. Maybe what they have three of the five out on the court, especially you get Jalen Brunson in foul trouble early in the second half. Then that changes how you play the game. That changes, which I think that changed the landscape for the Pacers too, because he had to play Matador defense during that second half as well.
Game two here, Knicks laying 5.5. The team that loses game one at home bounces back and wins game two, wins it comfortably.
Yeah.
That being said, to me, these teams are dead even. I don't love the idea of laying 5.5. Total is 227. Do you have anything for game two?
It's been kind of crazy. I don't know if you've noticed this, but the teams that have in these playoffs, the teams that have lost game one at home, that they've been 5.5 point favorites. Like, it's just been, that's like the precedent that's been kind of set. I'd probably still go with the Pacers, or at least like look at Pacers team total, because the Pacers were interesting last night. They had started out shooting like 70% from the field. Then they go through this terrible lull and then score 20 plus points in 2 minutes. Their team total was dead to rights. And then they covered it even before overtime with no issues. So I'd probably look at their over, maybe if you can find a 10.5, because I think this entire series is going to be really high paced. And like, even looking at it, like from a defensive perspective, Mitchell Robinson's probably going to play less minutes. You saw that they were taking Miles Turner out more frequently, because the ability of both these teams to shoot and the ability for them to stretch the floor, which you don't want a Mitchell Robinson, you don't want a Miles Turner who's going to be ineffective, and they're going to go after them. So I think we're going to see a lot of high scoring games in the series.
Adjusted series price at DraftKings: Pacers minus 165, Knicks plus 135. Is there a bet there?
I mean, if you like the 5.5, you take the Knicks and then hope you steal one of the two, and then you could play the other side. But this is really not enough to get enough value unless you're making a really massive bet, and then you can find yourself in a hole. I liked Pacers before, but I don't like them with the minus sign in front of them. Not like, even being up one game, you still have to play the second game. And I don't think that they're going to win two straight games in Indiana.
Correct series score: Pacers in six plus 320, Knicks in seven plus 350. That was my pick before the series. Pacers to sweep plus 475. I don't think that's going to happen, but hey, if you steal game two and all of a sudden 3 and 4 at home, I don't see that. But Pacers in five is 5-1. Knicks in six plus 650. Pacers in seven is 7-1. And then the Knicks to win the next four and gentlemen sweep and win in five is plus 950. If you had to bet one of those, which one would you bet?
Yeah, for my NBC Sports article before the series, I went Pacers in six, and I think this just feels even better if you bet Pacers in six, right? So I'd probably go that route.
Any player props you're looking at from a game-to-game basis? I know you mentioned you had Towns over rebounds. You can bet this stuff so many different ways. Points leader for the series, threes leader for the series. There's so many different ways to attack it. Rebounds leader, any player props you're going to be looking at here for game two?
You know, this was an interesting game because Karl-Anthony Towns' line was 11.5 for rebounds. And had Jalen Brunson not gotten foul trouble, Karl-Anthony Towns clears that with ease, right? But then when you bring in Mitchell Robinson and they have to do a double big, then Mitchell Robinson starts eating some rebounds. I'd probably go with Mitchell Robinson under 7.5 rebounds in the next game. It's going to be scary, right? He cashed this. I think he finished with 8 or 9 rebounds in the first game, but he's not going to play that complement of minutes there, which really helps you out. I didn't look at any of the series numbers just because I think that this series is pretty good with Cooks in the kitchen in terms of points and threes, but I don't know. I look at this Nesmith number. I wonder, like, his points number. I wonder, like, what's this going to be series by series? Because it's 13.5. He was an 11.5 guy last series, 13.5, maybe 12.5. I'd probably go Aaron Nesmith. It looks like they're trusting him a lot, especially giving him free range from threes. Pretty good three-point shooter. 13.5, about minus 105, even money, is probably be another prop that I'd play in this game.
Would 25-1 for Nesmith to be conference finals MVP, is that enough for you? Take a shot.
No, because he won't have another game like that. And then at the end of the day, like, Neesmith was had such a fantastic game, yet all anybody talked about was Tyrese Halliburton, right? Like, Tyrese Halliburton hit the shot for them to go to overtime, which to a lot of people trumps all of those threes that Neesmith made building up to that.
Yeah, I probably would need more than 25-1, but 8 of 9 from three is a hell of a start.
Insane.
And I still can't believe just that. It was like watching replay. I mean, he just kept coming down, pulling up and knocking him down. And it was just such an insane ending, such a crazy stretch. And after all of these made threes, there was one point where I think the Pacers hit like maybe 5 threes in a row. They're still down 5, and the Knicks still had the ball with like 20 seconds left. So you still needed, like, you needed a miracle to cut it to 5, yep. And then you needed a miracle after that. I thought, and I talked about this a little in my open, I thought the challenge, which took forever, drove me nuts. I was surprised. I think it was Siakam when they overturned it. I thought Siakam had a good portion of his jersey. I was kind of surprised they overturned that.
Yeah, there was a couple of overturns in that game that were pretty interesting. They were like, you know, but I also, like, when I think about these games, I become a victim of the moment, right? Where I kind of want something to happen because it's good for the moment. So I'm not really the best judge of like what should count and what shouldn't, because I always side with the momentum.
So you're Pacers in six. You would take the 5.5 for game two if you had to do anything. I haven't talked much about Thunder T-Wolves just because wake me up. If the Timberwolves are going to be competitive, we'll see. But I've been just of the belief, and I picked OKC in six, and I thought that was optimistic. We'll see. We're recording this before game two. Is OKC just going to dust everyone in their path and hold up the trophy here in a few weeks?
Listen, I, 2 months with the season, like 2 months of the season left to go, I bet Thunder to win the West, and I put a very substantial bet on it. And then when I saw the seeding, I was like, well, their biggest issue is going to be the Nuggets. Didn't touch that series. Then they opened like -350 versus Timberwolves, and I dived back in. I just thought that price was stupid. Like, they should have been -5, -450 to win the series against the Timberwolves. Like, I just think this, okay, like, you take, let's think about this. Like, you take the best shot from the Timberwolves is what? Like, what's their best shot, like, to beat them? Anthony Edwards goes for like 30 plus, but then you have like a Randall 20 plus. Now you're talking about you need to have the role players have big games while also turning the Thunder over and limiting quality possessions. It's just so much that has to go right, where I think on the other side of the ball, the Thunder, with the way the Timberwolves offensive makeup is they could just eliminate Anthony Edwards, and it like ruins Minnesota's chance. Anthony Edwards only took 13 shots in that first game. And like, I went back and did a individual analysis of Anthony Edwards' shot attempts and shot quality looks. Like, I'd say like of the 13, 10 of them, we'll do 12, because I think he took a half court shot. So we'll do 12 shots, not including the half court shot. Like, 9 of the 12 shots were quality looks, but like, you're only shooting the ball 12 times in a game. I know it got out of hand. It's just, they were eliminating him. They were playing really physical. Even when Gobert and others were coming to set the screens, they were fighting over the screens, not letting him shoot it from deep. The game plan was fantastic. What other teams, right, like in the NBA, have a Caruso and a Dort that you can just send at him all game? And those two guys, not only good defensive players, but high motors, both of them fighting through screens. And also, that's how you get Rudy Gobert into foul trouble, right? Like, he's coming to set these lazy. I'll add to this in a second, but I want to address that later. But he sets these screens, and now you have two guys just throwing at Anthony Edwards. He's not getting a ton of clean looks. It's just a big heroic effort. After having a series against, who'd they play last series?
Golden State.
Against Golden State, where it was another grinded defensive battle. It's just a lot of work on Anthony Edwards' part. But talking about Rudy Gobert, offensively, it would be so much better if Gobert stopped setting these lazy screens. I don't know if you've ever paid attention to it. They're so lazy and most of the time and ineffective. Some of that is on the ball, the ball handler, right? Like, you take too long or you go too early. But like, he's massive, right? Like, set quality screens, get in place. Don't like, he like what, like what Rudy Gobert will have is like arms like halfway out, and like, it's not, I don't know, it's not setting anything. It's just getting in the way. But yeah, I think the Thunder continue to roll. I'd probably lay the 7.5. I do have a prop from there, but this is gonna air after, so that doesn't matter.
Yeah, we're putting out the ability, the possibility that we old take expose ourselves, freezing cold takes ourselves, and it's 1-1, and Minnesota looks great. So if that is the case, so be it. But we'll see. I think we both expect OKC to advance, and really, I know Indy's a great story. Knicks would be a great story if they got there. I'd be shocked if OKC, barring an injury, probably to SGA, is not holding up the trophy here.
You know what's kind of sad, right? Like when I was just going and looking back at like the series. I know it was like, what, 2-2 in the season, but like Anthony Edwards only had one big game. He was held under 25 in now 4 of the 5 games. And the one he went 29, I think that was the game they still lost. They won. I think they scored 130 in that. Like, it's just so much on his shoulders. Cause I just don't think Julius Randle is like a game changing superstar.
College football. This is a time where once you get past the NBA Finals, NHL Finals, NHL Stanley Cup, look, it's around the corner. It's not here yet, but it's around the corner, at least from a prep standpoint with all the transfer portal and stuff. From our perspective, you have to really start getting into it. Where are you in your process? What is your process like getting ready for the season from a betting standpoint, from a content standpoint, everything?
Yeah, so where I'm at my process right now, I'm familiarizing myself with the teams in terms of depth. Who's going to be playing where, any positional changes, any guys who have kind of had big springs. There's a lot of buzz and speak that you're going to hear this off season. And a lot is going to be from the big accounts with a lot of followers. I don't really care so much about that. I want to hear what the coaches are saying. And I'll use Alabama as an example. All off season, you're going to see, and this is no disrespect to these guys by any means, but you're going to see the on threes, the PFFs, they're going to have their analysts with these takes that really don't matter, right? Like a lot of them are guessing, and it's totally fair, right? I want to hear statements like what DeBoer said. Where's one area of improvement you need to improve? Where's one area that you've improved the most? Then I start to stack those chips up from there. My favorite thing to do, and there's a couple of services that offer this, I always have to look at returning production. While it's not a be all end all, teams who generally have the most returning production normally do well, or they see improvements if they were poor. Example, that FSU team that went undefeated, they led the nation in returning production that year. Hawaii, when they struggled, they were last in returning production. But also, like I said, it's not the be-all end-all, because if you think about Florida State had a ton of offensive line returning production, and then their offensive line ended up being soft. I also want to see like continuity. Guys who've played together before, if you're throwing in any wrinkles, draft changes, like guys who go to the draft, guys who left the transfer portal, and then quarterback play. Is there room for a guy or a guy to make that next step? Is there anybody who could be a dark horse who can change it? Because I think the biggest thing that we fail to realize as handicappers, especially in the futures market, is there's always going to be surprise teams that take that next step. Arizona State, for example, right? We didn't know Sam Levitt, the freaking transfer, was going to be an absolutely phenomenal quarterback. So you have to kind of factor those in. And then from there, I go schedule by schedule. It's a grind, but I find trap spots. I circle all my trap spots first, tough schedule breaks, and then teams that go out there and they have really soft schedules. Like Texas to make the college football playoff was like -195 last season, and their schedule is such a joke. I know a lot of people don't want to sit on a -195 future, but like it's just really simple to find situations like that.
Any teams you have a little nugget on yet? I know Clemson's a team a lot of people like, buying into the Klubnik hype. I'm not there yet with any of these teams. I still have a lot of work to do, but anything you're like looking to bet, or you're just too early?
I have a couple things. Let me pull up my list here. And these are just soft, right? Like soft lines. So I don't want anyone to get mad at me if any of these lose, because I'm still a ways away from locking them in. But let me pull up one. Let's see if I have any listed. Of course, I just went on vacation, and so now my camera roll is messed up because it has 10,000 vacation pictures. All right, I don't have enough time. Let me see if I can find one. I'm thinking over my top head. Like, I'm probably going to go the under on Ole Miss's team total, team wins this season, right? They lost a lot on that defensive line. That was really their bread and butter. And then you go and you lose Jackson Dart, that productivity from Jackson Dart. You lose your best wide receiver in Trey Harris. And now you have a quarterback in Simons who we don't know if he's going to be the answer. We don't know if he's going to be the real deal. That was the best, the best opportunity for them to have a ton of success within this short window. So we'll kind of see what happens. That's probably one I'm going to take. And last year, I thought, you know, Alabama probably played the worst they could while having not a terrible season. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Ty Simpson. Ty Simpson comes in for Alabama, former five-star, sat behind for 3 years, now gets Ryan Grubb back as offensive coordinator, has the best set of wide receivers that Alabama has had in probably 4 seasons. I think they set him up for a ton of success. Unfortunately, Milroe wasn't set up for success. So we'll see what happens with Alabama. Georgia will be interesting. I'm not a big fan of Stockton. Their game plan is going to have to be vastly different. Clemson has one of the best D lines, if not the best D line in the country. So that's another one I have my eye on.
Can't wait, man. It's not like it's right around the corner, but by the time I always think of it this way, by the time the NBA Finals ends, you're like,
yeah,
five, 6 weeks until the Hall of Fame game in the NFL. Then you got NFL preseason and you can sense it. It's around the corner, so it's exciting.
Yep, absolutely. Totally
you think,
agree.
You think Bama will be good?
I think they'll be good. I don't think I think this year they don't have to have as much pressure on the offense. They're going to return the most defensive production in the SEC while losing Malachi Moore, Jahad Campbell. I don't know how they retained a lot of these guys, but they have no excuse defensively. They don't have many holes, which is really nice. And they have one thing they lacked last year was depth in secondary. Now bringing in Cam Calhoun over, Zaven Bryan's going to be there. They also did well getting Deshaun Lee to stay committed and come to Alabama, another five-star with length. It's going to be weird, though. I will say this. This is going to be one of the longer secondaries I've seen in a college football team. Doesn't always translate well.
If DeBoer loses 3-4 games this year, is he on the hot seat already? Is that possible?
No. Okay. I don't think he becomes on the hot seat until year two of Keelan Russell, Gatorade Player of the Year, his hand-selected 5-star quarterback. I mean, that will be, if he loses games with probably going to be the best quarterback to ever play at Alabama, yes, he's going to be scorching hot. They might only give him like half a season if Keelan Russell starts and they start off losing 2 games before halfway through the season.
And that's why he's coming next year?
He's already here, but he's a true freshman. I highly doubt they're going to put a true freshman in there. Not one with that high of a ceiling.
Interesting. Brad, this was awesome, man. Let everyone know where we can find you.
Yeah, you can find me on X at Mr. Brad Thomas. You can also check out any of my work, NBCSports.com. Once again, this college football season, we'll have our college football show, which is on the NBC Sports website and YouTube channel.
Brad, appreciate it, man. We'll do it again soon.
Thanks for having me.
All right, rate, review, subscribe. We'll be back Monday. Enjoy your Memorial Day. See you then.